This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 263.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is another odd episode, and that means that we have an odd number of people.
We have an odd guest.
We have... I don't know. Chris, are you an odd guest?
No, I can't argue with that. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
We are delighted to have a longtime friend of the Family Gamers, Chris Leader from Calliope Games on the show. How are you, Chris?
I am fantastic because I get to talk to y'all. I'm so excited. I missed seeing you at conventions. So I know, I'm so excited to be here.
Our 10-year-old was reminded. He knew. He was reminded last night that we're not going as a family to PAX Unplugged because they can't be vaccinated.
Unvaccinated children and really large conventions seems like
not
a
right
very
now.
Bad
just
idea.
Not right now. And that was bad.
There was
full on meltdowns. Yeah, I had to take him aside, and we had to watch a special TV show together just to make him feel better. But it was rough.
Well, I think he's most unhappy because he didn't think he was going to get to see me. So all you have to do is make sure he understands that I'm not going for those exact same reasons. I've got two little ones, and they're not vaccinated yet. Yet being the operative word. So once that happens, though, I'll feel much more confident. And in 2022. Fingers crossed, we're all having fun at convention hall again.
We'll see. We'll see. Yes. But all right, so this is episode 263. I have a fact about the number 263.
Yes.
This one was a hard fact to find. Like, sometimes something comes a little easy. Even 261, which was the fact about the first female runner from the Boston Marathon, that one wasn't that bad. This one,
he was searching
work.
Hard.
This actually is a submission from a listener, Corey. Thank you to Corey for sending this one in. If you would like your name mentioned while I mention a fact, trust me, it means less work for me. I am more than happy to do so. So this is a fact about the number 263. Chris, have you ever heard of the company Tesla, the car company?
Yeah, I think so. I may have heard of them.
Vaguely familiar. Okay.
They sell the most electric cars in the world. So, Anitra, I'll ask you this question. Which one of their cars do you think they've sold the most of?
It's the Model 3?
Yes, the Tesla Model 3. This is the first car. This is their goal car. This
kind
was their
flagship.
What's that word? Like the one that they've always been working for because it was the first one that was priced to be like a mass market vehicle.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It turns out, now they usually, if you go to their website and you look at their specs and stuff, it says that the Tesla Model 3 has a range of like 350 something miles. That's if you buy the extended range package. The standard range of the Tesla Model 3 is, Chris, would you like to guess?
263
miles.
All right.
And that is my fact about the number 263. I am so thankful that I found something. Thank you very much to Corey for submitting that fact. It saved my day. Considered going factless this episode. I know.
You haven't done that in over 100 episodes.
Perish the thought, Andrew.
I know. But you know what? Corey saved us again.
He saved the day.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks to Corey, and thanks also to our sponsor, First Move Financial. Have you ever heard the term, it takes money to make money? Well, it's not the only way to make money, but it is a true statement. Income, however it looks, is like an engine. It can start slow, but as you build your resource pool, it often becomes easier to make more. If this sounds a little bit like the last time you played Wingspan or Terraforming Mars, it's because there's a lot of similarities between engine building in board games and financial engine building in real life. If you need help figuring out how to get that engine started, First Move Financial might be able to help. Head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to see how First Move Financial can kickstart your financial engine today.
All right. Thanks so much again to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show. So at this point in the show, we are excited to talk about the games that we've been playing.
Yes.
The stuff that we've been doing.
Yes.
I have two games this week. Neither one of them I played with you.
True, although I did play one of the same games.
Chris, what have you been playing lately?
I'm in the middle of a move. We are packing up. So I have 65 boxes worth of games that have been put in storage.
Oh, boy.
So what I've kept are the games that I can play quickly that don't take up a lot of space. And a lot of that is Roll and Writes. And the one that we've been playing like crazy is Super Mega Lucky Box.
Yes!
For Walker Harding.
This game is so good.
Adore that game. And I'm a big silver and gold fan. I always enjoyed that. I thought that was a really accessible, fun one. But Super Mega Lucky Box just has that immediate, like, you know, bingo fun. Plus, it's got the Schoolhouse Rock look. We've been playing that like crazy. And then the other game, and this one's way more obscure, but it's brand new. It's a game called The Living Infinite, and it's an asymmetric game. It's a one versus many, and it's by a company called Chronicle Books, and it's designed by Dylan Bertolo. So my history with this game goes back a little while because Dylan pitched me that game at Gen Con years ago, and I loved it. So I told him this. There are two games that have been pitched to me that I wish we could have taken for Calliope, but for whatever reason, because of production or, you know, maybe it was a little outside of our parameters, we couldn't do it. The first was a little bird game called Wingspan that Elizabeth pitched to me a long time ago that I loved and we couldn't do. And I was so sad about that. This one, which is now called, it's The Living Infinite, is the other one. I absolutely love it. It is a bluffing game. One player plays as like the monsters of the deep. The others play as divers who are trying to repair their submarines. The divers have to go down these paths. But first, the creatures choose a card that tells you how many steps they're going to go up towards attacking the divers. And then the divers place their things. And then the monster reveals. And they, you know, you're trying to get resources and things. But it's one of those wonderful games where you're looking each other in the eye and you're going, Did he put the two down? I want to go on that space, but he's going to put that two down. I just know he is. And there's just this wonderful bluffing thing that happens. And they knocked it out of the park with the production value. It's got wooden puzzle pieces. It has metal coins. It's just this gorgeous thing. But it's not by a really well-known company. I found it on Amazon. Dylan alerted me that it was available because I've been telling him for years now. Since he said he signed it with somebody else, I said, as soon as it's available, you have to let me know. Uh-huh. So he let me know and I bought it. It's called The Living Infinite. I have been playing that with my family and I only got it a couple of weeks ago and I haven't been able to get together with a big group of people yet, but I know it's going to go over really well. But my family just loves it because we get to kind of mess around with each other's minds when we play it, which is
so great. It's super accessible to the kids and stuff?
Yeah, it's really easy. So my 10-year-old loves it because he likes to outthink me all the time. And my daughter, who's 7 and she's into princesses and doesn't really care much about the deeper stuff, she just likes it because she and her brother can work together against me, which is awesome.
Sounds about right. Yeah,
choosing spots to put your pawns, you know, that are going to avoid where I'm coming up as the monster or whatever. So it's great for them. It's a wonderful game. I really, really enjoy that game.
Wow.
Very cool. Yeah.
I love hearing about games that I have never heard anything about, so that is super cool.
Unfortunately, this one stands a very good chance of not hitting a lot of people's radars. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hopeful that with conventions, you know, maybe next year they'll be able to really bring it in, or maybe, I don't know, maybe they're going to do PAX Unplugged or something with it. But it's not a company that's really well known for games. But I tell you what, if this is the quality of games they're making, I think that they're going to do really well if people find out about the game. So, you know, I sound like I'm a walking advertisement for it. It's just that it is one of those, I want to turn people onto it because it's just so much fun.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with the company either, although Anitra's clicking through and I see they made Carmaka, which I've at least heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And I've heard of Donner Dinner Party.
Oh, yeah, I've
Someone
heard of that
has
too.
Died. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, that's really cool.
They're not
really
completely
cool.
unheard of.
I think we'll look into them
That looks really cool.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about something you've been playing?
Well, I've also been playing some Super Mega Lucky Box because it's really fun.
It is excellent. Yes. So we kind of characterize Super Mega Lucky Box almost like, so we are huge Fleet the Dice Game fans, but that game can get a little intense and a little complicated. And there's a lot of, okay, I do this. And then when that happens, I do this. And then when that happens, I do this. So we kind of talk about Super Mega Lucky Box almost like it's like a reined in, kind of calmed down, more family-friendly version of Fleet the Dice Game. Because you do get a lot of that kind of combo-tastic stuff, especially when you need like one number to finish a column or finish a row.
And you're like, and I got that number.
And that gives you two things, which you can put somewhere else, which complete those rows, which give you the, you know, and it's got some of that same feel.
Can I ask you, I've played the game a ton. I have never gotten an entire card in the first round ever. I know it's extremely difficult to do, but have you done it?
No, I have completed 3 cards in the second round.
Well, that's not what I'm asking, Andrew.
I started with no.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
You have to be so lucky for that to happen. Like, you've got to get just the right numbers, or you get just the right combos within that one card. But it's so cool that you go all in on that card. That's the only way to do it. Which
one might say you have to be super mega lucky, even.
Oh yes,
maybe.
Perhaps.
Yeah. So Super Mega Lucky Box, we love it. It's great.
It's so good.
Did you play it solo?
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, you can play it solo for anybody who doesn't know.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
I have been playing a solo game, which you also have been playing.
Probably more than you, but yes.
Yeah, probably. And that is Grove. Have you seen this game?
I have seen. I've not played it, though.
Yeah, so the first one is, I don't remember.
Orchard.
Is it Orchard? Okay, so Orchard is the 9-card kind of solitaire thing where you're stacking them up and you're trying to get these perfect combinations.
And there were dice in that one, too.
Yeah, as you stack them up, your baskets get bigger. And then at the end, you know, once you've used all the cards and you kind of score all your baskets, and there's like a range. Our episode with Katya Howitson, she talked about Orchard. Grove is like the sequel to it, which, having not played Orchard, I can't tell you exactly how much they match up, but I can tell you that the way Grove plays is exactly like Katya explained Orchard. However, there's 18 cards, not 9. And so it's almost like set up like you're going to play 2 games of this when you sit down to play one. Like, that's how it works. You play with the 9, you're done with those, and then you grab the other 9, and then you play again. It's really, really fun. It's a puzzle that constantly makes you think, oh, I can do better next time. I can do better next time. I can do better next time. And it drives you back to it to play more and more and more. It's super small. It's 18 cards and, like, I don't know, like 8 dice.
Yeah. Like that. 15 dice.
15 dice, whatever. I don't know. A pile of dice. But you could put this in a pocket. Like, it's not much bigger than a deck of cards, really, like, in terms of size.
And I will say the advantage to the 18 cards is that now they can do the same kind of thing that Sprawlopolis does, or Circle the Wagons, where you can pick out 2 cards of the ones you're not using, and those become like extra goals and ways to get bonus points, but also give you a target score to say, if you beat this score, you win. If you don't beat it, you lose with these bonus conditions.
I always thought that was so clever how that worked out with Sprawlopolis. I can't imagine how, I mean, even with just 18 cards, how you balance that out and make sure that it works with the cards that are in and out. But that's such a fun, cool way to vary up how the game feels each time you play.
Yeah,
well, and it's ingenious because you know you're playing with such tight parameters, right?
Absolutely.
It's 2 sheets on the printer. That's where you get your 18 cards. So, which I'm sure you know all about. So a lot of fun there.
All right. What else have I been playing? I have 2 other games I can talk about. One is Roll Through the Ages, the Bronze Age.
Oh, the big heavy wooden one?
Yes. I mean, it's not that big, but it is heavy and wooden.
It's a smaller box, but it's heavy. And there's a lot of wood in it for a rolling right.
Yeah. I pulled this out because our 10-year-old, I'm homeschooling again this year, and our history curriculum, if you want to say, for the year is ancient history. So I was like, oh, hey, this is an excellent opportunity. Roll Through the Ages, the Bronze Age doesn't really touch on any one civilization in particular, but kind of reminds you these were the things that were super important and kind of on the front of everyone's mind in this era of history. You know, got to build monuments, got to feed my people, got to get more people, but then I got to feed more people and get technologies like being able to avoid famine through irrigation, or medicine so you have less risk of disease, things like that.
And so you get to build really cool wonders with that one, too.
And you get to build cool wonders, too.
I played that game a ton way back in the day, and then they had an app for it that I played a ton of way back in the day as well. And then now they've got the Era game that Matt Leacock made, which is basically the pimped out version of Roll Through the Ages with tons of plastic. But the original is great. It's got those wooden dice that have like the shaded
carved
bits and things. Yes. Yeah, that's it. And it's a small box, but it weighs about 3 tons.
Oh, it is
very, very heavy.
It's so heavy. Well, so you've got these 7 large wooden dice, and then you've got 4 wooden player boards.
Yes.
Along with the giant pad of paper for the actual roll and write. Yeah,
and it has those great pegs, like at the Cracker Barrel, yes, when you go and you put those things in. It's got the pegs. It's got, and then the pad of paper for the Wonders is like 4 inches thick.
Yes.
Yeah. So funny.
Yeah. So
it's amazing what sticks with you in a game, right?
Yeah. But it's really, I always loved that one because there's that, sometimes you go all in with getting lots and lots of workers, but then you got to make sure you can feed them. And then, there's a lot to love with that game.
Well, and it's got this interesting restriction that the best way to pay for new technologies is to have lots of really expensive goods. Like, you can you can roll up coins, but coins are not that great. You'd rather have a nice big stash of goods that you can sell off and buy something. But you're limited to only having 6 goods at the end of your turn. And every time you gain goods, you always start from the cheapest ones on the bottom and work your way up. Mm-hmm. So it's this dance back and forth of like, well, I want more goods, but also the best way to get lots of goods is to take on the skulls that often mean bad stuff. But sometimes they mean bad stuff for other people if you roll just the right amount rather than bad stuff for yourself.
And it also has that great thing that a lot of roll and writes do where you have to dedicate yourself to a track. So like if you're going to fill in the Wonders, you can do the little low hanging fruit ones, but maybe you put it towards the bigger ones. And then as the game is going, you're like, oh, wait, hold on. I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish this thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You end up wasting a bunch of resources trying to build something.
Oh,
And then not actually get to the finish line. Yeah. That super stinks.
On a much later note, we also played some Unmatched, mostly by his request because I kind of pasted him at Roll Through the Ages.
So I got to tell you, like, I'm kind of envious of the whole game schooling thing in general. Like, I come upstairs from, I worked in my offices downstairs. I come upstairs, they're playing board games. I'm like, oh, this is school, Dad. Yeah, right. But it was even worse with Unmatched because, number one, I knew that Unmatched wasn't a school thing. And number two, I had decided to work upstairs for a little while. And they're literally playing next to me on the table while I'm trying to work.
To be fair, we had already started and you came upstairs and sat down.
Whatever.
Not my fault. So
who do you like in Unmatched?
Although I did not win this time, I really like Little Red.
She's super
Red
fun.
Riding Hood. She is a lot.
I'm a Bruce Lee guy. I find Bruce Lee absolutely hysterical.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, but no love for Cobble and Fogg?
Oh, Cobble and Fogg. Okay. As a set, it is the best set. 100%. There are a couple of characters that... Chris, have you read our Cobble and Fogg review?
I believe I have, yes.
Yeah.
I think I have. Yeah. Well, I mean, those characters obviously near and dear to me because those decks came from us, with the rest of the team. I'm really excited for Battle of Legends Volume 2 because I worked on that one as well.
Mm-hmm. So are we.
They just revealed everything, which is fantastic because I was so tired of holding it all in. But what I love about Unmatched is that everyone at Restoration, Rob and Justin and Noah and everybody else who's there, they do a great job of making sure that from set to set, the power doesn't creep up too high.
Yep.
And so you can have Little Red facing off against Medusa, and that's still it's not like one is way over the top or something like that. And that was part of the difficulty. But what was funny was at the time that we were doing Volume 2, they couldn't tell us about the Marvel sets that were coming. So they kept alluding to the other project. And we would come up with these ideas, these crazy ideas for like Yenenga from the Battle of Legends set. And they'd be like, yeah, that's a great idea. We have something similar for the other project. And there were times that we were like, do they really? Or are they going to steal it and use it? We just don't know. But they're good people. I don't think they would do that. Yeah, but it was still funny to do. But I can't – I mean, as an old school Epic Duels fan, being able to work and play in that world was fantastic. And seeing how much – I mean, they do the card council at the very end. They will have these long meetings where they go card by card and make sure that they feel exactly right. They put so much love into that thing. It makes me so happy that every time they release a set, I get so giddy. Even the ones I worked on and the ones I didn't, I still get giddy for every set.
You can really tell. Our particular game, I picked Little Red because my son had already picked the Raptors from Jurassic Park.
Okay.
So I figured Little Red would be a good choice. I think, honestly, if we do this again, I will probably try being the Invisible Man instead.
I love the Invisible Man.
My problem was that he kept pinning me down as Little Red, surrounding me with Raptors.
Yeah, I really like Invisible Man, you could vanish.
Yeah, that's my whole...
I think my least favorite in Cobble of Fog, since we're having this conversation now, it's probably Dracula.
I always looked at Dracula as the entry point to Cobble and Fog. Because everybody kind of knows Dracula. His abilities are kind of a little bit more normal, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm doing air quotes like anyone can see that. A little bit normal. But he's fun. He's fun. But, you know, it's funny, though, because there's people who are like, I hate Jekyll and Hyde. I just hate him. It's too hard to play. It's
I love Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah. And there's people who hate Invisible Man because Invisible Man, one of his whole strategies is to wear down your deck so that you get exhausted and you die because he's worn you down. Now, that's not usually how Unmatched goes.
Unmatched feels like a super fast strategy. Game, right?
Yeah.
And so people are like, I hate that. That's no good. And it's like, well, yeah, but he's one character and he doesn't always go that way, but he can. So. Yeah.
Well, and from the very first time we played Cobble and Fog, I loved the theming of Sherlock Holmes is all about deducing what's in the other player's hand and deducing what's in their deck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though I find that incredibly hard to play against anyone except my children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because my children are open books to me.
Yeah. He plays around with your head a lot, which is exactly what Sherlock Holmes would do.
I know. Right.
And it was, you know, we always come at it from a place of the, how does the character feel? You know, and that was what Cobble and Fog was fantastic because it was four characters or you know, teams that were really well known to people.
Yeah.
So when we got into volume two, it was really interesting because we did a ton of deep dive research into all of those characters so that we would know who they were. And then Restoration had cultural people who came in and really helped to make sure that it was there from the very beginning. But Sun Wukong, we were like... He needs to be the most frustrating, annoying little monkey he possibly can be. And so that is so much fun when you play. It's going to be fun to watch people take on, you know, him versus like Sherlock Holmes and just see how that goes. But, you know, having played the Deadpool set that they released, that one is, oh my gosh, that messes with your head. It's 30 different cards and they all do the wackiest things.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it's spot on. They did an amazing job with that one.
Yeah, I think Bloody Mary is the creepiest mini that I have ever seen in an Unmatched game for sure. She is just terrifying looking. I'm super looking forward to it. I just, every single one of them I get excited about in completely different ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is really, really cool. I mean, I think at this point we have everything. We did move on from Buffy. We didn't love that set.
Just didn't resonate with our family, which is fine.
I'm the same way. I didn't watch Buffy, so I can respect what they did with some of the cards and things as a gameplay thing. But my heart's not in it because I didn't watch the show. So when I play with Kevin, who's my co-designer of a lot of this Unmatched stuff, he loved Buffy. So when he plays, it's on a completely different level. He gets all the little references and things.
Yep.
So I'm happy for him. You know, if they made a Back to the Future Unmatched, I would know every darn thing about
that
track.
Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, that's the value and the charm of a game that has so many options. Is you can be like, this one doesn't work for me. I'll be
and that's the thing. Yeah, there has been some talk about Bloody Mary looking a little violent, a little jump scary. And that was the whole idea is she's going to be the jump scare person. And, and so in the end, they change one of the cards just to be called Jump Scare. They're like, we're not going to allude to this.
Yeah.
We're going to straight up grab it.
Just lean into it.
And that's my thing, though. There's four fighters. If you don't want Bloody Mary, just put Bloody Mary aside. You've got three really good fighters. So
Exactly.
Yeah. Totally agree. All right. Well, that was a fun aside. By the way, everybody, Chris Leader is involved in some of the Unmatched design stuff.
if you didn't know before,
You know now. The other game that I've been playing is a game called Tranquility. This is a game from Lucky Duck Games. It came out this year. Tranquility is one of these no communication card sequencing with everybody else kind of games. The cards just have really, really pretty designs on them. But ultimately, the only thing that actually matters on the cards is the number.
Okay.
So by the end of the game, you have a 6x6 grid of numbers that have to start low and then go in sequence to the highest numbers. It's, you know, top right is ideally 1, bottom left is 80, right? So the numbers range from 1 to 80. The kind of the shtick of the game is you can put a card anywhere in the grid that you want to, but if you put a card next to another card, you have to discard a number of cards equal to the difference between the two cards.
Oh boy.
So like if you put a 13 next to a 14, you have to discard a card. If you put a 13 next to a 10, you have to discard three cards. You only have 5 cards in your hand, which means that you can never play a card next to a card that is more than 5 away.
So if you're trying to play something with a bigger gap, you have to leave a gap there?
You have to try to guess where these gaps are going to be in order to figure out what you're doing. So on your turn, if you're looking at it, you're like, nope, you can discard 2 cards. At the end of your turn, you always draw back up to 5.
Sure.
But once you run out of cards,
the game's over.
You're done. Game's over. Whoa. So it's pretty, I mean, it's kind of a lot of setup. The way it's designed, you have to set all these cards up to kind of create the border. And then there's a start card that you have to play. And then, you know, once you've got everything, somebody ideally would have a finish card left in their hand that you would play as well. And so you have to lay out these 24 cards to kind of create the border, which you do sort of need something since you can literally put a card anywhere. You need some kind of visual indicator. But it makes setup kind of obnoxious because you got to put all the, like, I mean, it's a tiny little box, right?
Yeah,
it's very small.
It was real small.
But boy, howdy, does this game call for a playmat. Because if all you had was a 6x6 grid, your setup is like that. But instead, you got to lay all these things out and you got to make sure that the cards aren't moving around. And it's a little bit fidgety and kind of, you know, whatever in that regard. This game would be perfect on Board Game Arena. It might be there. I don't know.
Probably not.
You don't have to do it. You look at 5 cards and you click 2 things. This is like literally made for a digital space.
Sure.
But it's super pretty. And when you put everything in sequence, it's kind of the way the cards are designed. You can look at them from either side. There's like a day side and a night side. And it makes this like really, really pretty. If you look at our Instagram or our Twitter, I just posted a picture of this game today with 1 card missing. We played today, first time. We made it to 1 card left and we lost.
All right.
So that's Tranquility from Lucky Duck Games. It's very pretty. It's got to be inexpensive because it's just a little box of cards. And we had fun with it. I think we'll play it, obviously, some more. The only thing I did not care for was just the obnoxiousness of the setup. You know what I mean? So yeah, so that's that.
Cool.
I will give a quick minute to, you played a brand new game today.
I did.
At the same time, our youngest asked me if I would play a older game, which was Castles of Calladale. We do not play this often, but every time we play it, I love it. I really enjoy it. It's super
basically
forgiving.
Super non-competitive Galaxy Trucker.
Yeah, like. Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
You're building a castle, and there's 3 different kinds of materials, basically, it can be built out of. The conceit here is you're a magician's apprentice, and you, like, waved a magic wand and did something awful and destroyed 3 of your neighbor's homes, castles. And you're trying to put them back together. So there's like a fairy tree and a gnome's country manor and a dragon and knight's like stone castle. So a lot of the cards have multiple types of building material on them. And you want to match things up, you know, in that Galaxy Trucker kind of way. And at the end, you want to have a castle that is complete. That has what they say is sky all the way around.
Oh.
So there's no like open, you know,
just like in Galaxy Trucker.
But you can rearrange the cards that you have at any time throughout the game. Your turn is you pull 1 new card. You have to decide right away whether you're actually going to use that card in your castle or not. If you're not going to use it, it's worth 1 bonus point at the end. But other than that, once you've got stuff down in front of you, you'll be like, oh, I can put this here, but only if I move this other stuff, and that's totally fine. And that's part of why I really enjoy it, especially with younger kids, because it's so low pressure.
Very non-confrontational.
Yes.
That's great. That sounds, I don't think I've heard of that one. I'll have to maybe.
I think it was from Renegade maybe about 2017
about
or so.
4 years ago, yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we take a quick break, and then when we come back, we are going to talk to Chris about what he does. I mean, I, listen.
What do you even do?
I would love it if, like, while I'm at work, someone's like, you know, I need you to do this thing. And I was like, well, let me ask the director of fun. if that's something that I need to do.
Yeah, well, I need to direct fun. Big loads of fun get delivered every day, and I gotta put them where they go. For
all these, what are the Kallax squares? 15 by 15 inch squares? I gotta just slide the blocks of fun in there like gelatinous cubes of fun.
Oh, gross.
All right, we'll be right back. Anitra, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
I hope the chicken came first, so I get to keep the egg. This is a snap review for Chicken Chicken.
Chicken Chicken is a fast-moving memory game for 2 to 8 players, ages 6 and up. It was designed by Charles Bossart and is published by GameRight under license from Okaluda Editions.
Let's talk about the art in this game.
Here's some art.
The illustrations by Pauline Berdahl are clever and welcoming, and it's really easy to believe that the foxes here only scare off the chickens.
They're so cute.
All these illustrations strike just the right balance in this memory and pattern recognition game. They're clear, but there are a few you could mistake for each other if you're flipping the cards quickly. So, Andrew, let's tell them how to play the game.
Absolutely. So, one person gets to be the head farmer. The head farmer in the group is controlling the deck. They're slowly flipping out cards. You can determine your speed depending on your family or whomever is playing. From the deck, one at a time, and stacking them in a face-up pile so that the most recent card is the only one that is visible. All the players silently count to themselves how many eggs there are. But there's a catch. If a hen comes out, the hen sits on the egg, and it covers it up, and so the number goes down. When a fox shows up, it scares off the most recent hen, bringing an egg back into play. When a player thinks they have exactly 5 eggs in the pile, they slap the pile. Whoever slaps first, they get a colored egg fragment.
But other players can challenge them to get a fragment instead. Then the head farmer does a slow walkthrough of the pile to see what really happened and who's right.
Right, and that's why you keep the pile around, because you can replay what has happened since the last slap. The first player who gets 3 fragments wins.
This is simple enough.
Ah, but there's a few catches.
Just a few. There are all kinds of additional types of cards that you can add and make the game more difficult and exceedingly silly. So let's talk about some of these extra cards. Aspen the dog will stick around and chase off the next fox who appears. But Vanessa, the disguised fox, looks just enough like a hen to sneak by the dog and chase off a hen.
Then there's the worm, Tiger the Worm. He distracts the next hen and stops them from sitting on an egg.
There's also the farmer, who can collect all of the eggs currently in play, resetting the count to 0, but he won't take any eggs that are under a hen.
There's also things like ostrich eggs, which count for double, the rooster, and don't forget the ducks.
The ducks do absolutely nothing, except you all need to say quack when you see them.
All right, well, especially for the Family Gamers family, what did we expect from Chicken Chicken?
Well, slapping games don't generally go over real well in our family. Even when they're supposed to be silly, there's just a lot of hurt feelings, because a small difference in pattern recognition will make a huge difference.
Especially with age differences, too, because that's really what is going to affect that stuff. It can be disheartening to always come in second place or third place, because your arms aren't as long, so you have to try a little bit harder.
But the tagline for Chicken Chicken told us it was an egg-cellent memory game. So we wondered,
what makes this one different? So let's talk about what surprised us about this game.
All right, well, we had a blast. Slapping the pile, challenging each other. We tried adding in all different kinds of combinations of the special cards, usually not all of them at once, which messes up our memories, and we also tried flipping out at different speeds. You favored flipping really quickly, and everybody was like, I don't know how many there are, I'm just gonna slap.
So the strategy is the head farmers, you flip out really, really fast, somebody slaps, and you just automatically say, no way.
No, I challenge you, you're
wrong.
I
run that way. Two-player games did feel a little bit less interesting because the competition, it just wasn't as intense.
Yeah. We did still have some hurt feelings when the slapping got too enthusiastic.
And hurt fingers.
Yes. But most of the time we were laughing because it's so silly.
All right. So, Anitra, do we recommend Chicken Chicken from Game Right?
Well, it's compact, mm-hmm. it's silly, mm-hmm. and it takes less than 20 minutes to play, even at the maximum player count of 8 players. There's no reading required, and you may find your kids beat you unless you can play really close attention to the pile. I would recommend it for family gatherings, especially with a wide range of ages and lots of players.
All right.
So, Andrew, what do you think we should rate Chicken Chicken from Game Right?
Well, with all of that stuff that you said, I think we're going to have to rate it 4 eggs out of 5.
And that's Chicken Chicken
in a snap.
And we're back. We are here with Chris Leader, Director of Fun for Calliope Games.
Director of Fun!
All right.
That was amazing.
You do incredible voices. They're super amazing.
Thank you.
I will say that.
Thank you. In another life, I would have wanted to be a voice actor and do Transformer voices because I used to love those Transformers. There's Shockwave up on Cybertron. Oh, mighty Megatron! And my favorite was always Starscream.
Oh, mighty Megatron.
You could do it, man. You could. You know, when you do the big announcer voice, it makes me think of Better Off Dead. Better Off Dead? Better Off Dead.
Better
yeah.
Off Ted.
No. Better Off Dead. The okay. one with John Cusack.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
When they pull up next to the two Asian guys who were doing all the announcing in the car.
Oh my gosh, I don't even remember that.
Oh man, they sound like old like 50s announcers. And, I can't do the voice, but it's outstanding. It's very very.
I love doing that. That's my outgoing message on my voicemail. People call my phone, says congratulations, you've reached Chris Leader, and people will sometimes they'll hang up and then call back, and then when they leave a message, they're laughing. They're like, I thought I'd called the wrong number.
Fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yes. That's, you know, I'm going to do the Sam Neill voice from Jurassic Park where he says that line. He goes, you remember Raptors. He almost does like a Batman delivery of that
line. Yeah, almost.
You go back and watch Jurassic Park. You remember Raptors.
I love the delivery, though, because it's serious and unbelieving. And
a little scared.
And very scared all at the same time. Yes. Like, how could you?
I have nothing but love for Sam Neill in Jurassic Park. I love the first Jurassic Park for all of its warts and problems. Is such a fun movie. And Sam Neill's awesome. I have not enjoyed the Jurassic World movies as much, but I will. You better believe my butt's going to be in that seat because Sam Neill and Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum are back for the next one. I'll still be there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember going to see the first Jurassic Park movie in theaters with my dad. And I guess I was old enough. What was that, 90?
That was 93. 93. Yeah. The first time I saw Jurassic Park was at a preview. I went with a friend who was writing teen reviews for the Chicago Tribune. I got to go to the media screening and I sat right behind Roger Ebert to watch.
Nice.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then I had to lie to a friend who I said I was going to go and see it with like on opening night. I couldn't tell him.
Oh. Well, now he's going to hear this and he's going to be like, Chris has been lying to me for all these years.
No, I eventually told him I felt bad. And then I don't know that we've spoken since then.
But yeah, I was 12 years old when that movie came out.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I was old enough to see that movie in theaters.
If you were with your dad, you were fine.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I know. I know that like legally, like whatever. But like, I pretty much felt like the guy on the can when T-Rex shows up.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess your dad's like, "Don't blink, little Andrew. You're gonna watch every minute of that."
I actually recently shared the story with our kids. The first time I saw it was a year or two later, being broadcast outside at night.
Oh.
And once the T-Rex showed up, I noped out of there. I was like, no. Mom and Dad, where are you? No, I'm not watching this. Nope, done.
That's a scary scene. And it holds up. That's the best part.
Oh, yeah.
I think we should show that to our kids.
We should show it to the kids.
Yes. If you've seen other movies from 1993, those effects don't hold up.
Oh, no.
Most of them do not.
Jurassic Park holds up. It's good.
Mm. Yep. All right. Well.
Should I just try opening the second half again?
This is great. This is so good. I mean, okay. Well,
thanks
we have
for listening to the Jurassic Park podcast with Amitra and Andrew.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have proven that at this point, Chris is well deserving of his title as the director of fun. And I hope that everybody else is also crying, laughing like we are. I'm sorry if you're driving because it's good stuff. I have actually listened to podcasts and been laughing so hard I had to pull over. So if you're laughing too hard, please pull over and be safe. So, Chris, so you're the director of fun at Calliope Games. So other than the fact that that means that you get to show us awesome games, what else does that mean?
How do you box up the fun every day?
Yeah.
Big boxes and lots of scotch tape. But it, my job is I wear a lot of hats. So I develop games. I screen incoming submissions of games. So I have to dig into people's submissions if they want to pitch a game to Calliope. And I do a little bit of customer service. I go to the conventions and do all the stuff there. I answer emails. I do podcasts with fantastic folks like you guys.
Oh, thanks.
I wear a lot of hats. So with Calliope, we're a pretty small team. I mean, one of the things we always laugh about, you know, is that everyone thinks that a publisher has like the Calliope building, like in New York City, where there's hundreds of employees. And most publishers, it's like less than 10 people, and sometimes it's less than five. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we are at Calliope is, you know, we have an art director who lives in Scotland, and we've got Risa who does our social media and marketing, and she's in Georgia. Ray's in Seattle, but he's moving to North Carolina, and I'm in Chicago. So there's we each have to do a little bit. Michelle is Ray's wife, and she does she's basically the real boss and does all the money stuff. There's Ken Franklin, who's the senior yeoman. You know Ken. Yeah,
we do. We do.
Good guy. He said to say hi.
hi, Ken.
So we all just sort of pick up where the other ones leave off. You know, obviously we all have certain talents, but we just kind of try to keep the ship running in the right way. Ray does most of the heavy lifting, but all of us are there to kind of pick up the slack and do whatever we can do to keep things moving forward.
Awesome. Awesome. And so this year, let me see. So we reviewed Mass Transit, which was super a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. That was me and my good buddy, Kevin Rogers, who I've known since we were wee little lads in middle school. So we've known each other for a very long time. And he was one of my co-designers with Back to the Future Dice for Time with Ravensburger as well.
All right. And also Enchanted Plumes.
Enchanted Plumes.
Which is super fun and gorgeous.
And
we like
yeah,
that game a lot.
A good time.
You know, sometimes we get a lot of pitches, obviously. A lot of people pitch games to Calliope. And we can use only certain ones. There's certain parameters with Calliope that a lot of publishers don't have. A lot of publishers will have everything from tiny two-player games up to like heavy-duty miniature games. We really have our lane that we stay in, and that's mm-hmm. 2 to 6-player games, 2 to 8-player games, games that can be played by all ages, you know, mm-hmm. and they don't take a long time to play, and they don't take a long time to learn. And that one was called Peacocks when it was pitched to us, Enchanted Plumes. And it was immediately intriguing, and that was with like crappy clip art feathers.
Sure.
But the concepts of how you had the, you know, reverse triangular plumes mm-hmm. going from the mm-hmm. wide down to the narrow, it was already fantastic. And then the color restrictions and the top row is negative points. And then you build the positive points below yep. it. It just right away, it was one of those where you play it and you go, yes, this is like, you know, it was like, The game previous set that we published was Shipshape by Rob Davio. The minute you played that one, you went, oh, yeah. Okay, I get this. This is really fun. Yep. And it was the same with Peacocks that became Enchanted Plumes. And I'm super proud of that. Brendan Hansen, who designed it, is a fantastic guy. A new dad. Really just a wonderful person. And it was so much fun to take his design, which was almost completely done. We tweaked a couple of little things with it and add the art. And that's one of my favorite things is when we do work with a new designer we haven't worked with before and they see how much care we put into the the whole development and design. And then when it comes out, it's just so much fun to partner on that. So it's been a blast to watch Brendan enjoy Enchanted Plumes coming out. And just the reaction to that's been amazing. Just like with Mass Transit, obviously my baby, I love Mass Transit. And by the way, Mass Transit is, we've been out of it. I mean, it sold like poof, it was gone.
Yeah.
So if the whole, you know, gods of shipping and everything can work for us, the winds
they've been,
of fate.
They've been drunk lately.
It's that and Enchanted Plumes, we actually have more of them coming. So hopefully before we get to Christmas time, we'll have more of that. But it's,
I will say, and I don't know if it's because the mechanics of Mass Transit are such that nobody owns a particular meeple. I have never rooted so hard for a meeple before in my life.
Yes.
Than I have rooting for the, I'm just trying to get these guys. Maybe it's because I used to commute from Boston to central Massachusetts that I know how awful the end of day commute is. And I'm like, guys, I'm trying to help you. I'm rooting for you so we've won what, once?
Once.
And I mean, it was like, you would have thought the Red Sox won the World Series in our house. I mean,
you took your shirt off and you're
absolutely.
Everybody was jumping up and down.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. And then you're like, I mean, I kind of feel a little dumb, but also I don't feel bad. You know, I've never rooted so hard for a meeple in my life.
I when we went to PAX Unplugged, and this was, I can't tell time anymore, 67 years ago, I'm going to say.
it sounds about right. Yeah.
When I pitched it to Ray, I said, I have this idea for a game that Kevin and I made, and I want to show it to you. We had one of our longtime volunteers, Tori, was there. She's awesome, high energy, really fun. And we showed it to Ray, and she was there, and we lost, which happens a lot, but you have fun. You always get really close.
Yes, always.
That triggered Tori. She's like, well, we have to play again. And we must have played like three games. Then we hadn't won. The next day, she just kept coming back. She's like, we got to play this. And I think Ray, seeing her one playing, made him go, you know what? I think this might be kind of fun, because it's one of those games where you get tantalizingly close so many times. And then when it finally happens, it's the biggest celebration in the world.
Well, and I think that's great in a cooperative game, but it's even better in a cooperative game that's short, like 20 minutes or less. Like, yes, we have time. Let's do it again.
It's like
we can make this work.
You play solitaire. You can deal out the cards. You get it a little ways into it. You're like, well, I've lost this one. There's no way. Shuffle it all up. Play it again. Mass Transit's meant to be that same way, where you lose. You don't feel like, well, I just wasted 2 hours on a solo game or a cooperative game. And what a huge setup that was. I've played games like that before. There's a lot of co-op games that you play solo and you lose and you're like, well, that was a lot of effort for nothing. I really enjoy playing Mass Transit solo because I can just pull it back out again. I've enjoyed watching people play that one quite a bit. And that's Mass Transit and Enchanted Plumes. And then our third in that little set was Allegory that came out, and that's by Zach Wiseman. And that one is more for a bigger player count, but it does play down to two. But it's for people who like poker games. They're really enjoying the heck out of that. And that was like Ray's passion project. He really enjoyed that game. That's like perfectly up his alley. Ray loves that bluffing, bidding. That's like Station Master that we put out recently too. It's that same thing where you can kind of mess with people with your coins and what you do with them. And so Ray loved Allegory, and the art we put on it was all good. I mean, it's insanely good and stuff. So the other thing is, we're not fans of empty air and boxes, you know?
Yeah,
so,
I noticed that particularly in the Mass Transit box.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then that is to the detriment of sleeves sometimes. Often there's not enough sleeves, which I know some people think it's heresy not to sleeve, but with the box like that one, there's not much room for sleeving, but that's okay. We try to make the cards as high quality as we can.
I don't know. My take on this, and I mean, people have heard this on the show, is that games are designed to be played. And if you are the type of person who wants to sleeve your games, you're probably buying like functionally irreplaceable games on Kickstarter. And so those are the games that maybe should make accommodations for those kinds of things. But when it's a game that is going into distribution or it's being widely available, like, whatever, get over
$20 game, $30 game.
Yeah, honestly, like if you play Mass Transit so much that
you've damaged the cards. Like, Calliope deserves your money for another copy of the game. Just get over yourself and buy it.
That's a great, I like that. And I didn't hear anything other than buy a second copy of
it. we're rooting for you, buddy.
I mean, that too.
But you know what? All of that is awesome. Calliope Games is wonderful. Ship Shape is a top five of all time game for me because it's so unique and so inventive. And I remember the look on Ray's face when he showed us the prototype of that game at PAX Unplugged.
Oh, yeah.
I remember I was so tired. I was about to pass out. But he's like, you got to see this. This is so cool. And I was like, this is amazing.
Like, this is so cool.
And then maybe it was probably my expectation. Like, it took a little bit longer than I thought it was going to actually come out and be available. And I was like chomping at the bit for this game. Like, this game looks, I'm so excited for this. And, you know, we brought this, for a while we were running game nights before COVID ruined everything. We were running public game nights at a cafe, and it was a big hit there because people are getting up and they're looking around the table, trying not to spill their beer and all that stuff. And we've been along for the ride with Calliope for a long time. Ancestry is another top 10 game for us. Talk about a game that doesn't get a lot of love.
No,
it's got some great names on it, and Eric Lang and Calliope Games. Like, I don't know what else you need. That's a fantastic game that we've shown to a lot of people. Another game with a tight gameplay loop that we really, really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's another one of those, like, you know what? I can do better next time. Just like
that. And it has that really interesting thing that you see in like Seven Wonders, where it's just the person to your left and just the person to your right that you like really care about. Right. And everybody else, whatever.
Yeah. Simultaneous play, and you don't have to pay attention to everybody. It's really just your neighbors and yourself. That's really all you're paying attention to.
Yep. So we love that game. So there's just tons that we love that Calliope is doing. But Chris, even though you managed to direct all of the fun at Calliope, you also managed to find time to make other games too.
I do. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So, you may have mentioned that a little bit.
Yeah, we talked about, obviously, we talked about Cobblin' Fog.
We've alluded a little bit. That's that's one of the things I always am. I feel very blessed that Ray understands when he hired me, I'm a game designer. And I'm a developer as well, and I love Calliope. I want to champion the cause of what we're doing because I think it's important. But he understands that sometimes I'm going to make a 2-to-4-player game, which is not something that Calliope publishes, or a 2-player-only game, or whatever it is. And so the understanding has always been, as long as, you know, the Calliope stuff is getting done, if I've got side projects to work on, he gives me his blessing, which is amazing. And so through that, I've gotten to make City of Gears, and I've gotten to make Imagineers with Ken, and City of Gears was with Daryl Andrews, and that was such a great time because he's such a great guy. I miss him. I miss seeing him at conventions too.
You know what's funny is everybody says that about Daryl in the same way.
Yes.
It's just, he's such a great guy. That's
what wait, let me try it a different way. Daryl Andrews. Ugh, that guy. What a great guy. Hats.
All the hats and the big beard. Cat.
Come on. What is that? An affectation? So, and then the fact that because we have that arrangement, the fact that I got to make Back to the Future Dice Through Time, that was, I mean, as a designer, that was my brass ring. And so I got to make the game I wanted to make that encompassed all three movies. I got to throw all of my lifelong fandom of Back to the Future into a game and just, you know, make the whole thing feel all of that. And, you know, culminating with like getting letters from Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale saying congratulations on making the game. I mean, that was amazing. The only thing, there's very few downsides to Back to the Future, the experience. The only thing that I really am sad about is because of COVID and not having Gen Con, Ravensburger had planned, they had rented a DeLorean with the wheels floating DeLorean that people would have taken pictures of, the way they did with like the Alien they had this past year. They would have had the DeLorean sitting out front of the hall and people would have been able to take pictures with it. That was heartbreaking. And just, you know, that I missed that, you know, that whole thing. But the fact of the matter is it was a labor of love. I got to do it with two people I love, Ken and Kev. And I got to work with people at Ravensburger that are just amazing human beings. Cassidy, who's over there, Mm-hmm. I worked with at Calliope, and then I got to work with her again on Back to the Future. And that was just, that was amazing, because she's just a really just straight up amazing person. So that was just great. And then we have two other projects that we're working on outside of Calliope right now that I can say absolutely nothing about, but that I am, oh, I'm so excited about. They're both amazing projects, and so I can't wait to talk about those, but that won't be until probably next year. So
is one of those a fancy project, or is that a different project?
Those I can talk about. That thing I can talk about. So, okay. And this goes back to Calliope a little bit, and the fact that I direct fun in different ways. We had our Titan series project, which birthed a lot of these great games, Ancestry and Shipshape and Everyone Loves a Parade, and all these great designers made games in the Calliope mold. So we had a lot of really great games, and there's two left. Well, technically there's three left. There's three designers. There's Peggy Brown, who's amazing. There's Matt Forbeck, who's amazing. Oh, and there's Mike Zellinger, who's amazing and puzzly. And so there's those three games left, but Mike and Matt are super good friends. So the two of them said, let's pool our talents and make some amazing games based off of Matt's series, The Monster Academy. And so they're actually making, it's like a proto RPG type of thing. It's a storytelling game. And there's actually going to be two different products along those lines. There'll be kind of a base game and then sort of like an advanced scenario type of thing. It's different for Calliope, but it's still going to be something where it introduces people. It's a gateway game. It gets people into that.
Yeah.
And the other one is a game by Peggy Brown that we've been working on for a while that's gone through many iterations, but that's the fancy game I alluded to just recently on social media.
Fancy with sprouts. That's all I know.
I'll say this, it's a tug of war style game. It's, you know, player versus all the players, kind of a asymmetric, you know. Okay. But it has some fun to it, which has elicited some of the biggest laughter and just amazing, just different ways of doing different gameplay elements I haven't seen put together. And so that's, we're calling it Project Bramble right now. And we will be sharing more information about that soon. The existence of those games is not a secret. It's just, we will be divulging more information about them as we go. We don't have any art or anything. Like, that was the thing I was doing today. I was working with making a card art for the prototype and treating it as if it was the final version, which I don't have. I have okay graphic design skills.
Sure, not sure, amazing, sure.
But I'm treating it like it's the most amazing thing in the world. And then it's going to get shown to like our graphic designer. And he's going to be like, wow, okay, great. It was the same with Mass Transit. I mean, I'm like, these look amazing. And then I look at it compared to what it finally was. And I'm like, okay, mine was crap. So, but yeah, so there's, on any given day, we're juggling different things for Calliope. And then at night we have meetings about different stuff. And, you know, whether it's side projects or whether it's Calliope stuff or whether it's, you know, digging into website changes for Calliope or whatever it is, there's just no two days are ever the same, which is great. There's certainly days where I'm inputting stuff in spreadsheets and my eyes are bleeding because I'm like, oh my gosh. But those are few and far between. And I have done other jobs. I've been a waiter. I've worked as a manager at Best Buy. I've done many different things. And I can honestly say this is one of the most fun I've ever had in my life.
That's good. That's awesome.
It's funny. I have people will reach out to me all the time and say, you know, I have this game idea or whatever. And it's always strange because I have to figure out where they're coming from. Are they coming from a place where they're like, I have a polished, tested game? Or in the case of certain things that people will be like, I have this idea. They're playing cards, but they're clear. So when you play poker, everyone can see through the cards. What do you think? Is that something?
Yeah.
And I'll be like, well, I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, it's, what I love is that everybody wants to make games. Everyone wants to play games. And I really think it's like one of those things where everyone has a good game in them, you know, especially the people who play a lot of games. But even the people only ever played, you know, Sorry and Trouble and Monopoly when they were kids, There's a game in there probably, I don't think the other
you
thing
talk
is
to any 8-year old boy,
yeah,
and they've got a game idea.
Oh yeah, for sure. The amazing thing is when people have a game where it's there's kids where they've played Pokemon or they've played those types of battling card games.
Yep,
they will really focus on making like hundreds of cards yep. with different creatures and stuff. And the sheer level of imagination that goes into that and the thought processes, it may never be a game that's on store shelves, but boy, oh boy, that's something to encourage because it's pretty yeah. amazing. It's really a humbling feeling, isn't it? When your
it
kids,
is.
Yes.
When your kids come up with an idea that is so good and you had no real input in the genesis yes. of that idea. And you're like, my goodness, this is a real person making real things that will contribute to society.
Yes.
It's an amazing feeling.
It's pretty nuts. Yeah. Well, yeah. How old? Your oldest is what, 10?
My oldest is in his 20s.
Oh, okay.
But then there was a bit of a hiatus. And then my oldest is 10. So I have a 10-year-old okay. son right. and I have a 7-year-old daughter. So
you have had the experience where like your kid will walk out and you'll be like, where's my kid and who is this adult standing in front of me?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you have had that experience because yes, I had that experience over the summer.
Yeah, our daughter just turned 13 and Andrew is having a hard time coping with this this woman in our house who's only an inch and a half shorter than him.
Yeah.
yeah, it's pretty Alex, who's my oldest, was my steadfast play tester through my very early days of being a game designer. He was there when I first learned about the Game Crafter, which led me to actually create games, which mm-hmm. led me to make Roll For It, which then got this whole ball rolling. So he was there for me through the early strategy games and stuff that I was making way back in the day. When,
super fun.
And then nice. So it's interesting now to have my 10-year-old son, Jensen, and he's now excited about that stuff too. Mm-hmm. The only problem is that both Jensen and Callie now have this idea that if they create a game, I can just go to someone and have it made, like published. So, yeah. you know, and I'll have to be yeah. like, you guys understand, like you're going to fail a lot. You could keep working. We'll, you know, if it's ready. And I've pitched their games to Haba, to mm-hmm. Ravensburger, and we get feedback and I share it with them and I say, here's what we need to work on and stuff. Cause they need to understand that it's yeah. you know, they don't know the dozens and dozens of games I've pitched or I've lost or I've forgotten about or I've given up on or whatever. They only see that there's some games on the shelf that got published. So they're like, what if there's some dice and look, a spinner. Pitch it to Fantasy Flight. It doesn't quite work that way.
Our kids are kind of like that, except one step even more removed. They hardly ever see game designers in process. The only prototypes they've seen are like almost final prototypes of
games.
That's
not true. Claire has been with me. I was talking to Sherry at Breaking Games.
Yeah.
And she, I mean, you know her. She's very
yeah.
like...
Oh yeah,
no BS, whatever. So we were talking about something at some show, and she's like, and I had Claire with me, who at this point would have been 11, and she's like, "Oh, I'm taking a game pitch. Why don't you sit down and play it with us?" I'm like, "Sure." So Claire has seen that before.
Okay.
Yeah, but I get what the nature means though, because there's certainly been times where the kids don't see the rough edges of what a thing was. They see it when it's far along.
Yeah.
Or it's almost like one step below like the production copy.
Right, exactly. So
they're not used to seeing it where, like when we were developing one of the games and I was just using a Sharpie on like, you know, on cards. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, this is how you get into the thick of it. You just make changes as you go. And they were like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to print out a brand new copy on the Game Crafter every single time. Not going to happen.
Yeah, we do. I think we've got like sleeved Pokemon energy with little pieces of paper shoved in the fronts of them for the actual cards.
Oh, my gosh. So the first game that I ever developed was with my buddy Neil, who is moving to Ecuador today, actually.
Wow.
He's a vagabond. He's lived an interesting life. But he and I had a game back in, I'm going to say 1997, 1998, that was called Coastercraft. And it was basically Magic the Gathering, but you were building theme parks and you would send saboteurs to blow up each other's roller coasters. And at the time, I knew nothing about sleeves or anything else. So basically, I was making the cards in paint, Microsoft paint, printing them out, and then glue sticking them to playing cards.
Perfect.
Sure.
And whatever. I still have a little recipe card, box full of some of those old ones. And this glue still sticks. I mean, they're still on there. But we would go to the dollar store and buy like just decks of cards. And I would just be slapping them on there. And then the whole thing was about, I don't know, why. So it was definitely, but you don't know what you don't know. And especially back then in the late 90s, it wasn't like you jump on Board Game Geek and there's whole, threads about sleeves or how to prototype or anything like that. We were just making it up as we went along. I would like to say that we've known each other for a few years now. I want to take a second and direct some fun, but really some love at you guys for just the amazing work that you do, the positive energy that you bring to games, to the industry. And we've all been through, obviously, the ringer over the past 18 plus months, whatever, 27 years that this whole pandemic has been going. But it's common to say, I miss you. It'd be nice to see you at conventions again. And most of the time when I say that to people, I'm lying. I don't really want to see him again. I'm kind of more like, phew, don't see that person again. But I really do. I miss meeting up at the tables at the conventions. I miss showing new things to you. I miss all those times when Anitra's got much more important things to do than show up at my booth. And it's just Andrew saying, well, Anitra couldn't be here. Her high school friend showed up and she abandoned us or whatever it might be.
Or, I go shepherd all the children so he can play the game undisturbed. That's okay. Throw me under the bus. It's fine.
I really do appreciate all that you do. And it's so awesome to be able to talk to you. And I'm seeing you over video, but we're chatting. But I can't wait until we can actually get back together at a convention again and talk over a game.
Me too.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, hopefully this is the third wave, right? The last wave, and this thing will settle down and figure out, no more variants.
Are you guys planning on attending Toy Fair?
I haven't gotten that far. I will be at the Gamma Trade Show.
So right now, knock on wood, and it depends on vaccinations, but, we will be at Toy Fair, so perhaps we'll see you there. If not, maybe. Sometime in 2022, fingers crossed.
Toy Fair is in 2022, right? Or is they doing
February? Okay. February 2022.
Okay. I didn't know if they were doing some alternate thing.
Everybody has moved the schedule.
Well, it was
everything.
So scary. I remember, and we've talked about this on the show. We had Steven Dutzman on the show, and we were talking about it. We went to Toy Fair last year. And it was 3 weeks later that they were converting the Javits Center into like a field hospital.
Yeah, that was the last convention I was at was there. And I remember it was definitely seeping into people's consciousness that, hey, this thing is a little bit serious. But even then, it was still the whole like, it's just a bad flu.
Yeah.
So
extra sanitizer, more vitamin
C. Well, it was like the week after maybe that I think it was the Gamma Trade Show once people had people were starting to pull out of stuff.
Yeah.
And then it just
no, that's crazy to say that was last year at Toy Fair because it feels like it was like six years ago.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That was, we were there. I was licking doorknobs. I mean, it was still like the halcyon days of joy. We were coughing in each other's faces and loving every minute of it. Yeah. So,
well, I am looking forward to big bear hugs and playing some games.
Yeah, sitting down at a table and playing games with people and just reconnecting a little bit. It's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But until then, we can still get in touch with each other online. So, Chris, if people would like to talk to you online, where would they go to do that?
I am on the Twitter. It's at Leader88, LEDER88. I am on – I'm also – always around with Calliope. So if you have a game pitch, you can get a hold of me at chris@calliopegames.com. I have a active Friendster account, MySpace. I have a lot of flashing images on MySpace. Music plays the second you come on. It's actually Hold On by Wilson Phillips.
Fantastic.
I love it. I think I commented on your live journal earlier today.
Yeah, yeah. You're one of my top eight people. gosh, remember that?
Oh, you couldn't hide back then. Anyway.
No, right. No. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, I'll be life is crazy. I'll be moving, so I'll send out change of address forms to everybody who's listening soon once I move.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Excellent. Well, Anisha, where can people find the Family Gamers online?
Well, you can find us on lots of different social media at Family Gamers AA. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. We are every once in a while on TikTok.
We try. We really do. But we're old.
We are old millennials, TikTok. And TikTok does not make sense. Yes, so yes. We try
anyway.
The best
way to do TikTok is just put a video occasionally. Just randomly one video and then nothing for a few months.
Yeah, that's what all the influencers tell us to.
Yeah,
yeah, you know, totally.
It's not about quantity. It's about quality.
And that's our problem. We just can't sacrifice quality.
But you could also interact with us in our Facebook community. Go to thefamilygamers.com/community. That's the easiest way to get there.
Yep, that's right. And speaking of quality over quantity, you can also just email us directly, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
You can also, don't forget, check out our Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise. We have t-shirts and hoodies and
stuff. It's hoodie weather.
It is hoodie weather. It's 100% hoodie weather. I wore a hoodie today. It was awesome. They are very comfortable, and I like the zip-up one, which has the Family Gamers on the front and the Play Games with Their Kids logo on the back.
Yep, same. That
it's surprisingly comfortable for being made of 100% asbestos.
99% asbestos.
Oh, okay.
1% recycled asbestos.
Hey, all right. Yeah. You got to 99%.
We sure did. We're 1%ers. All right. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcast or whatever your podcast subscription source is. You can also find us on Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify.
And anywhere else that you could find podcasts. Straight RSS feed, you know, whatever.
Yeah, all those things.
Hey, any chance we could listen to some You Red Raptors?
In a minute. The Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/family gamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you and you, Chris, pile up the victory points.
You Red Raptors.
Well, I don't want to keep you Bred Raptors away from Chris any longer, so we're going to go. But until next week, everybody, play games with your kids.
Kickstart your financial engine today.
Oh, she is a pro! That was amazing!
Your face is right next to where I'm reading the ad from. Right next to it.
That was awesome. Whatever. Okay. That's going to get cut.
I know.
So Andrew just farted on air.
It's true. You don't. You know what? People don't know how many times I farted while recording the Family Gamers podcast.
Wow.
But, you know,
deep secrets being revealed on the podcast. What a show.
You okay?
This is my moment of like embarrassed mom right here.
Oh, yes. Why?
Yes.
That is an embarrassed mom face right there.
This is the sweet, sweet emotional release of a day of tension coupled with just laughing.
It's like how have I put up with you for so long? And I do play it up for the videos.
Oh,
I love how you had that answer locked in. Like, she's like, how I put up with you? You're like, I'm charming. I am darn charming.
All right. This finally, Anitra has been begging for outtake shows for literally 150 episodes. And I think that this one, I might pull some stuff out.
I think you'd better.
Finally.
And by that, you mean like the entire episode.
This the is entire the last yes. 15 yes. minutes.
Welcome, fact, sponsorship.
Thanks,
find
Corey.
Us online.
Thanks, Corey. That's it.